Welcome to episode 12 of Nuggets for Vet Nurses, where we bring you microscopic samples of clinically relevant knowledge for your brain cells. I'm Marcus Taylor.
And I'm Esther Fan, both Kiwis and now from both ends of the globe. We are your show hosts. Now, we've got an apology to make. We do know that this episode is 1 week late, and it's because one of us was gallivanting around the world, visiting places such as Ukraine when there may or may not be a war going on. Stay tuned to the end of the podcast to find out who that was, huh, and why.
Yeah, that's going to be a tricky one to work out.
I know.
So last episode, we heard about Esther's animal-like teaching instincts, how she used to homeschool her sister when she was seven.
That's like when I was seven and my sister was four.
And we've seen videos on Instagram of her aggressively correcting her sister's bowing technique for violin. I just want to say that I wasn't the perfect child, I do confess. Me and my sister had some pretty severe rivalry going on where she used to actually pretty much she would commit a crime and then frame me for it. For example, you know, I was just an innocent three-year-old. She was about five. She said, "Marcus, I want you to tip a cup of milk on my head." And being the obliging, kind, loving brother that I am, I tipped a cup of milk over her head. And what does she do but go screaming to mum and dad, covered in milk, and say, "Marcus poured milk on my head."
Not untrue.
I said she told me to, and she said, "No, I did not. Why would I tell her to do a thing like that?"
That is untrue.
And I got in massive trouble, and that, let's just say that began in a war that lasted a good few years between me and my sister. So, yeah, I'm not completely clean slate over here either.
Classic. So now that we've lost all credibility as civilized, normal human beings that come from normal families, let's change subject and talk about today's topic. You mentioned microscopes and cells, so could we be heading into the lab?
Good intuition, Esther. This episode, we're going to be giving you tips on how to prepare the perfect sample, which will impress your vet, and more important than impressions, it will allow the most diagnostic information to be extracted from the sample.
Oh, goody. Let's slide right in.
Okay, let's go.
We'll start with cytology and staining. If we want perfection, we need to know what's imperfect first. What makes an imperfect slide?
An imperfect cytoslide is one that is wet. Remember, guys, vets don't look at wet slides.
That, I confess, is my pet hate. Slides need to be adequately dried before and after staining. Air drying is the best, rather than hair drying. But if you must use a hair dryer, just use the low heat or the cold setting, as cells are delicate and can get fried with too much heat. Samples being sent to the external lab also need to be 100% dry before putting the slide covers on.
What else is a pet hate of yours, Esther? No reason why this podcast can't function as a counselling session for your clinical frustrations as well as an educational and entertainment for nurses?
Well, I'm sure my nurses can shine a light on all my pet hates, but I don't want to seem like a clinical Karen. But I will say that another commonly encountered problem with a slide is one that has way too much stain left on it.
Those ones that are pretty much purple from end to end and you can't even see which portion has the sample on it, you mean?
Pretty much. The stain isn't properly washed off on those ones. And I know it comes from a common fear that you will wash away all the cells in the sample. But guys, hear me out, you won't. Or rather, it's very hard to. It's very hard to wash the cells off the slide. Because remember, when the sample is initially dried, as we just talked about, the cells stick to the slide. And then remember, what is the first of the three DiffQuick stains called?
That would be the fixative, right?
Right. And what does a fixative do?
Sounds like it should fix the sample to the slide.
Mm-hmm. Just like you fix a painting to the wall or you fix a hair appointment, things shouldn't move after they've been fixed. If you're really worried, you can dunk it in the fixative for 30 seconds rather than dipping or dripping. You do still need to be gentle when washing off the stains, so like don't blast them with a high power hose or anything, but don't be scared to use a calm trickle of water and get all the excess purple off, please.
And one trick that I use is I actually flip the slide around and I run the water so that the stream of water is landing on the back side of the slide, and then the water laps around the slide and just washes all the stain off, and then you know that the stream of water isn't even hitting the cells anyway. And if you don't see anything left on the slide after that, don't freak out. Remember, the cells are microscopic. If there's only a smattering of cells on the slide, you won't see them with the naked eye. Often the slide will look empty after staining, and then the vet will take a look under the microscope and ooh and ah and write a 500-word report in the history about it, and you thought it was a naked slide.
Mm-hmm.
Ask your vet to show you one day what they're harking on about.
Another common fear amongst nurses is making a blood smear. I'm happy to be proved wrong, but many of the nurses I've worked with shake in their scrubs or start sweating when I ask them to make a blood smear. But when I watch them make smears, I can see why they feel this way. Firstly, the drop of blood placed on the slide is often way too big. With blood smears, less is more. We don't need to examine a whole slide worth of cells. We only look at the feathered edge, and even the smallest drop of blood can produce this.
The feathered edge is the top part of the smear. Usually it's a nice curve, or maybe it has little fingers reaching up. This is where the cells are spread out enough to sit side by side. Further down the slide, they're stacked up on top of each other and aren't worth looking at.
The next problem occurs when the edge of the second slide, that's the top slide you use to draw back, touches the spot of blood and makes a smear. Many nurses will wait until the blood spreads to the edge of the second slide and then smear. Don't do this. It's too much blood to smear. It dramatically decreases your chances of getting a good feathered edge, especially if you put too much blood on the first slide to start off with. So, draw back your second or top slide slowly. As soon as it touches the drop of blood, smear away and do it fast.
I know it's a bit hard to picture, so we'll post a video on our Instagram feed to demonstrate.
Yeah, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. We love your likes and comments and answers to our quiz questions. Okay, so let's jump from blood to urine. As you know, a complete urinalysis includes a sediment exam where we look for crystals and bacteria and other cells.
Did you know crystals can form artificially in the urine sample outside the body if it's left out for too long? And in that time, other crystals can dissolve too.
Really? That's crazy and quite concerning, because crystals in the urine are important to diagnose or rule out. How long do we have to examine the sample before artificial crystals magically appear or before legit crystals disappear?
You've got between 30 and 60 minutes to look at the wet prep under the microscope before things aren't accurate anymore.
That's 30 to 60 minutes from when you take the sample out of the fridge and start to process it, right?
You wish. It's 30 to 60 minutes from when the urine was passed out of the bladder.
What? That's not long at all. Some owners need to battle 30 minutes of traffic to get to the clinic after catching a morning sample.
Yep, that's right. That's why a fresh sample obtained via cystocentesis or caught whilst the dog is watering your bags of food at the reception is best. If the owner is dropping in a sample over the counter, always ask when it was caught. If it was less than 30 minutes ago, you'd better go get your boots on and start spinning it down for the sediment. If it was at 4 a.m. this morning while you were still in bed, then you can kick back and have another cup of tea before processing it.
And don't forget to harass your vet to look at the slides as soon as you've prepped it. It's no point prepping it with speed and then your vet doesn't examine it for another 4 hours.
That's right. Get their vet into gear.
Man, all of this sounds really stressful. Who thought that microscope slides could be so stress-inducing?
Yes, but remember, the whole sample isn't ruined if we don't examine it in half an hour. The crystal status might be unreliable, but everything else will still be valid. Depending on the case, the vet might not care if there are crystals or not. So you might need to work fast, but don't panic.
Yeah, see guys, don't panic. Slides aren't stressful.
Not after today, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got one last lab-related tip today, right, Esther? What might that be?
Well, this one's about histology samples, and it's simple, just in case your brains are boggling. When your surgeon removes a lump that needs to be sent away for histopathology, they'll need to dump the lump into formalin so it can be fixed, that is, preserved.
Did you know the ideal formalin to tissue ratio is 10 to 1? That means the amount of formalin needs to be approximately 10 times the size of the lump going into the jar. It's just an approximation as a guideline, so you don't need to weigh the lump and measure out the formalin with a syringe.
Yeah, just eyeball the size of the lump and imagine if 10 of those lumps could fit into your chosen pot. We don't want huge lumps being crammed into tiny urine-sized pottles with a drizzle of formalin over the top. Formalin gets absorbed through the surface of the lump and stops the tissue from rotting. So if there isn't enough formalin, the center of the sample may start to disintegrate.
Okay, so we've given you 5 lab tips today to make your life easier and your pathologist pleasier, more pleased.
I think it's more pleased. So, right. Number 1, dry slides adequately before and after staining. Number 2, wash all excess stains off and don't worry about washing your samples away. 3, less is more for blood smears.
That's right. Don't fear the smear.
They're never going to forget this podcast. This is our tagline to fame. Your tagline to fame, Marcus.
What, don't fear the smear?
Yep. Urine should be examined within 30 minutes of being passed, else funky things can happen with the crystals. And number 5, the histopot should be approximately 10 times the size of the sample being placed in it, so there's enough formalin to fix the tissue. Right, now let's get out of the lab and even out of this country. So, Marcus, since we started this podcast series in like November, so not even 6 months ago, you've moved from Finland to Jordan, and then you said you were in Poland, and then set foot in Ukraine, and then you said you were in Israel, like, on the weekend. What were you doing in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I have to say I was seeing a lot of news, of course, about Ukraine and about the war, and I kept thinking, like, man, this is so ridiculous. Like, why doesn't somebody do something to help? Why doesn't NATO or the United States or somebody or New Zealand send, why aren't they doing more? Why aren't they sending more military? Why aren't they helping more? Then it occurred to me that I have it within my capacity to do something too as an individual. So I bought a $50 return ticket from Jordan to Poland for the next day. I got on a plane and I flew to Poland. And then I got on a train and I took a train to the Ukraine border, and I did have somebody I was supposed to be meeting up with, and luckily I did find them, and it turned out there was a place for me to stay there. I was pretty nervous going there because I had no idea what to expect, and obviously there's a war on and I didn't know what was happening. But when I got there, everything turned out to be incredible, and there was just such a massive need for people to help the refugees getting across the border, and also just somebody being there with them to you know, give them food and water, and also just to sit with them and talk with them and pray with them and ask them about their stories. And it was just heartbreaking to see so many families getting split apart, because the place where I was, I went across to the Ukraine side and I stayed in a little town close to the border. And on that spot was where the fathers and the husbands were saying goodbye to their wives and to their children, because obviously the men are not allowed to cross if they're between the age of 18 and 60. They're not allowed out of the country because they're expected to stay behind and fight. So there were so many, obviously, tears and just heartbreaking situations there as families were getting broken apart and they weren't sure if they would ever see each other again. So it was incredible to be there. It was heartbreaking. It was unreal to see an entire country that's completely in war mode. Like, everybody is doing something to do with the war. They're driving supplies further into Ukraine. There are videos, you know, of kids packing sandbags in Lviv, and you've probably seen the ones of like the woman making Molotov cocktails, and just everybody is doing something for the war in Ukraine. And there's not a shred of doubt in people's minds that they're going to stay and they're going to fight and they're going to win. They're very determined, incredible, strong people, the Ukrainians. I have a huge respect for them.
Wow, yeah. That's pretty strong stuff. And I think that's definitely one of your gifts and capabilities, that sense of adventure and wanting to help people.
Yeah, I really, really am very passionate about going overseas to where there's places of need and seeing what can be done to help. So I really love it and enjoy it.
I just wanted to ask, did you go with a particular organization, and is that organization well known enough for people to be able to donate or support if we post anything on Instagram, or not really?
I did, but I don't think that they necessarily actually need any more money.
Okay.
Because they got donated quite a lot of money. But in saying that, let's post a link to another organization that are delivering goods into Ukraine, right, and people can donate to them.
Now that sounds good. So we're going to post videos of smears. We're going to post some pictures of Marcus maybe traveling, and we're also going to post a link to some organizations which you might be able to help out if you're able to. So don't forget to check us out on Instagram, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.